21 minutes past 5 o'clock now. Stephen Travers, who is a member of the Miami Show Band, joins me here in studio. You're very welcome. You were shot with a dum-dum and you said to me, you feel blessed to be alive. Is today a very difficult day for you?
Not really, Mary. We've always known, well, we've hoped that this day would come along, and today, as John Lennon said, give me some truth. We got some truth, but not all of it. Mm-hmm. So we're hopefully there'll be another day like this.
So what does it mean to you today to get this report from the Historical Inquiries team and to have detail, 11 pages, we're told, devoted to this whole question of this man, Robin Jackson, the jackal, and these questions in relation to collusion?
Well, I suppose the real significance for me anyway is the fact that other than the trials, that's a long, long time ago, this is the first official document that we've got. This isn't our report. This is the British authorities' report. So it's up until now they've been stonewalling us, and whenever we ask questions, you know, there's either denial, but usually stonewalling us. So the fact that they've taken the time and the effort to put it down, it makes it official, and it's in that respect, it's very important. But I was surprised that the collusion was proven. Well, we think it's proven now via the RUC collusion. We always thought, because of the presence of the man we call the British Army officer at the scene, that it would have been an army. Somebody would have spoken, or that there would have been evidence found as to the identity of that man.
This, when you say the British Army man, they were in, some of them were in army uniforms. You believed that it was an army checkpoint, and you were reassured, as Philip Boucher Hayes pointed out earlier, that it was an official army checkpoint and all would be well by one of your band members.
Well, it's more pointed than that, Mary. We knew that these people were UDR, when we heard them talking, and the HET point out that there's very little difference, if any, between UDR uniforms and British Army uniforms. But I wouldn't have known anyway. I was, new in the band. It was a big adventure to me. But a man arrived on the scene. Now, whether he arrived or whether we just took notice of him later on, but he was dressed markedly different. He had a lighter sort of fatigue type uniform on. And he had a crisp, educated, posh accent, English accent. And we've always said, you know, that this spoke about this man's presence. But during the conversations and the investigation of the with the HET, you begin to doubt your own memory. You begin to doubt your own
your recall of events.
Yeah, and I began to ask myself, you know, well, when did we first start to flag up the presence of the British Army officer? And was it when we were writing the book, or was it, did it just evolve, or was it wishful thinking? But very, very fortunate, about a week ago, and this was after the report was published, I found an old Evening Herald newspaper. And it was dated the 14th of August 1975. So that's the date is 14 days after the incident. But I remember that I did this interview about 2 or 3 days before it was published. And if you look back on that, it clearly says I talk about the that Brian flagged up the fact that a British Army officer was there.
And 36 years on, how clear is your recollection, given what happened to you? I mean, you were shot and left for dead that night.
Very clear. I mean, it's like I don't have to try to remember something. It's always there. If I want to see it, it's like...
Is it a nightmare that visits you all the time?
No. I've never had a nightmare. It's never scared me for some strange reason. I remember when afterwards I was being assessed. You had to go to see the psychiatrist, and they spoke at the beginning about giving me this sodium pentothal, this truth thing to bring this thing out in a controlled environment, because as he said, the psychiatrist said, it'll hit you like a ton of bricks, maybe in 6 months or 6 years. But after a while, he said, I didn't need that, that I had handled it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's always been there. It's very easy for me. I can just visualize the scene now.
Do people still ask you about it all the time?
They do. I think that's the real impact that it's had on my life. I mean, as a musician, I was I felt very fortunate to get the job in the band at that. So I was on my star was rising. Really.
How long had you been with the band?
About 6 weeks. You know, I came from Carrickenshire to the biggest pop band in the country.
Yeah.
Not that I was a big show band fan, but Fran O'Toole was in the band and Tony Geraghty, and I greatly admired them. But also, you know, I was able to pay the mortgage and we were just married.
You were in the big time.
I was in the big time, yeah. Yeah. It was a great compromise.
Yeah. After today now, after this report, where would you like to see it going from here? We were talking to Paul earlier about the families and what they would like to see happen. What would you like to see happen?
Well, first of all, I think that I'd like to say that the having this information really doesn't give us the right to start pointing the finger and wagging the finger. That's not what it's about. What this is about is to be able to use the information that we have to basically to make things better, because I've always been far more concerned with truth than with justice. Justice is just the implementation of man-made laws, where truth, I believe, is the DNA of civilization. So it's good. It's very important to us, but it's also very important to everyone on both of these islands that they use this information wisely.
All right. Thank you very much for coming into us. That's Stephen Travers, a member of the Miami Show Band back in 1975.